Welcome back. As you can see, we've sorted out who is the next speaker. It's Volker Lendicke, who is a Samba team member and also with Zernet. Volker will talk about doing more than one thing at once, sort of. And I understand that some kind of audience participation is to be expected. For those of you who might want to switch to the other track in time, Volker's track.
In particular, Andrew Bartlett.
Is he allowed to switch or not allowed?
He's expected to switch.
Ah, okay.
Oh, because yeah, he's giving the talk.
Now I understand. Yeah, thank you. Because in the other room, there will be two tracks. Volker will have these
here.
Two tracks for his one talk. So if you want to listen to Andrew, you just watch him standing up and maybe follow him quietly. So have fun.
I didn't expect that many people. I don't have slides. This is at least meant more like Birds of a Feather session. I've spent a considerable amount of time over the last years to get a decent async programming model. And what I want to do here is give you a short overview of what we try to achieve and the various attempts that are right now hiding in the Samba source code, from really ugly, something which you exactly see here, really ugly, and I will point out why it's ugly, to an event-based model that originated in Samba 4 and which is a bit too low level from my point of view to be of general use, to something that Stefan Metzmacher and myself have developed in the last 6 weeks or so, so that we think async programming can be something for the mere mortals among us. I had to ask Trish several times to debug some deep problem in Samba 4 in the async programming there, and for me, it was just too difficult, and I had to really put that down to get very simple to be able, essentially, to get WinBind in Samba 3 back to a sane and debuggable programming model. So, again, no slides. I want to walk you through code. I want to take questions during the talks. So, if I just ignore you, step up and dance. I hope I won't. I don't think we need a microphone because if I don't, remind me to repeat the question so that they get recorded. Okay, asynchronous programming. How did Jeremy say Samba is a huge fucking state machine?
Something like that.
Sorry. Okay, no screensaver anymore. Sorry. The problem is that when you look at the SMB protocol, many things can happen at once. For example, a user can open a file, and somebody else has an oblock on that file, and so we have to ask another client that has this file open, please downgrade your oblock, tell us, and at that point, only after that has happened, we can tell the initial client that triggered the oblock break, the oblock is broken, go ahead. This can take up to 30 seconds, and meanwhile this open is hanging there waiting for the oblock break, other requests have to be responded to. This means that, we have an open sitting somewhere, and other things just happen meanwhile. For example, another open, a close file operations on the same file. And this is just one example of multiple things happen at once. For me, the real problem, or the end user problem that got me into this async programming business was WinBind. Christian probably remembers the installation we had at a large corporation with 100 domains something? I don't know, the main problem was not the 100 domains. The problem was that some of these domains were in Japan, in Vietnam, in Australia, network-wise, very, very far away. And what happened was, a user wanted to authenticate against WinBind. And WinBind would do this, and the domain controller that was able to authenticate that user was next door. It turned out that somebody else, meanwhile, had tried to authenticate a Japanese user. And this Japanese domain controller was just slow due to network problems. And so the user that was authenticating locally expected to be authenticated in 100 milliseconds or so. We had to wait for the Japanese domain controller to come back to us and to reply before we could even ask the local domain controller. This led me to the first attempt at doing asynchronous programming, meaning, okay, I want the authentication that is happening against the Japanese domain controller happen simultaneously with the authentication against the local domain controller in Berlin or so. And I don't care when which reply is received first, I can sort that out. But this means that when doing this async style of programming, I have to expect answers in an arbitrary order. And I have to store enough state somewhere to see, okay, this reply goes to that client, that reply goes to that client. By the way, I'm talking about programming here. If I leave any questions open, please feel free to ask, really. What did we do? What did we, yeah?
Before you go into any details, could you tell us about your motivation not to go the multi-threading road?
That is a very good question with probably a very long history in Samba development. Oh, yeah. Why didn't we go multi-threaded? This is the natural way to do it, in particular when you look at Windows programming. Just do everything multi-threaded. To be honest, we didn't have the infrastructure ready for that at that point. Historically, the Samba development model was based around threads is evil. So we did everything non-threaded, and we are still there. We are in the process of fixing that. We have to go threaded it because the system dictates that. But we will try to isolate those threads as best as possible into non-threaded libraries, or into libraries that present a non-threaded interface. For example, one example that we are discussing is the unlink system call. If you try to delete a 10 gigabyte video file from a USB stick, this can take ages. This can take longer than 30 seconds. This can take minutes. Because depending on the file system, the kernel has to walk really large file system internal structures, and USB sticks over USB 1.1 can be slow. And while we are sitting in this unlink call, we are not able to reply to SMB client requests. After 30 seconds or so, the client starts to send echo requests, and if we don't reply to those very, very quickly, the client will say, okay, network name no longer available. Very bad error message. So what we will have to do sooner or later is to encapsulate the unlink call, which doesn't have an asynchronous version in the POSIX API. We have to encapsulate that behind a decent API in a thread, in a separate thread.
So you're thinking of having maybe some IO working threads which just do IO and nothing else?
Right. We are thinking to have IO worker threads. Not exactly IO worker threads, but syscall worker threads, okay. To avoid the synchronization mechanism that if you access central data structures, what we would like to do is to have that thread only, really only do that single syscall and nothing else, period. And so we hope to avoid most of the real nasty issues. We will still have to be very careful, like with things like fcontrol logs. We should probably not wrap fcontrol logs into such a thing. Because, I mean, that's where it gets nasty. But things like the file name based, things like open, pre-read, pre-write, it's exactly how the glibc does the async IO, the POSIX async IO. That's where we are, what we are planning right now. Okay, multi-threaded programming was not on the table because our base infrastructure was just not thread safe because we never had threads in mind. Jeremy?
I just have to chip in with Alan Cox's comment on threads, if people don't know it. So Alan Cox said of threads, a computer is a generalized state machine. Threads are for people who can't program state machines.
Okay. There's several ways you can attack this problem. Has anybody ever looked at libev, libevents, something? Okay, quite a few people. We have something like libevents in the system, and we build upon that. So we have I have my Samba tree here, and when we look at lib t event, we have t event.h. That's our general lib event style library that we have here. This was essentially developed in Samba 4. We ported a very similar API, or I wrote a very similar API in Samba 3. And now with 3.4, we have that code shared. What's the model of this? We have something like this function tevent at fd, or a simpler one, tevent at timer. Doesn't really look simple, but that's what it is. So what you have in all these libevents style functions, you have an event context. This is the central thing that everything hangs off, that where everything happens. And to make multiple things happen simultaneously or in sequence or something, what you do then is, okay, I have a function that's our timer handler, T, I will look at that in a second. Timer handler T, that's the function type that we pass to our T event at timer. And I want this function to be called in 5 seconds. For example, timeout something. I want to fire off a DNS lookup. I want this to take 5 seconds. So I want something to happen in 5 seconds. The model that this does is, okay, I call this T event at timer. I tell it, okay, please, either I go with an absolute time. I'm not sure. I think it's an absolute time at this point here. I mean, you have to make a choice whether to use an absolute time or a time difference from now. This is an absolute time. What we also have is the function that is about to be called at this point in time. And what you also do is you pass it a private data pointer. This is an important thing that for example, when you look at the NCC qsort library function, that just sucks because it doesn't pass a private data pointer to your handler function, or in the qsort case, to the comparison function. This is clumsy. So whenever we have something that is being called later, what we do is we pass it a void star, which the particular event can pass anything in. So, okay, we want something to happen in 5 seconds. How do we trigger that? What we have in SMBD and in Samba 4 and everywhere else is a so-called central event loop. And now I have to look where it is in SMBD 3. Essentially, what happens is T event loop once. So we have our T event context, which we have attached a timed event to. And what we do somewhere else in the central engine is we just spin in this T event loop once, just a while one, T event loop once on this T event context. That's about it. And this is where Jeremy says, okay, that's a huge state machine. So we have everything hanging off this central event loop. And this then takes care of, okay, let's look at the get time of day. Let's look at the current time. Let's see, okay, there's these events to be happening in 1 second, in 5 seconds, in 10 seconds. And this T event loop once, that takes care of just calling those callback handler functions at the right time. We have similar events. The most important one, I think, is the file descriptor event. This essentially means this is a generalized, glorified select loop, essentially. Yeah, Andrew?
With the timer events, does it cope with if the system time suddenly jumps or goes backwards and forwards?
The question was, with the timer events, does it cope with somebody changing the system time?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't right now.
Yeah.
Jeremy has had fun with it while trying to get work around some printer problems, I think. Yeah.
Can it help to use the monophonic time instead of the real time? Because that would just be monophonic per process and shouldn't care about real walk of time.
Sorry, what is monophonic time?
Just
yeah, thing. I know what monotonic means, but what's that API wise? I just don't know.
Okay, it's an idea I will tell you.
Okay, the question was if we could use monotonic time to work around that problem.
Just avoid, I think it's POSIX timers.
Yeah. So what we have to cope with for adjusting system time, you're correct, Andrew. We will have to patch this.
I had a tester while working at HP who, in the middle of submitting print jobs to a Samba print server, set the time back 5 years. Just for fun. and things didn't go so well after that. So we will have to cope with that at some point. But right now, it's a fairly simple API.
Normally, at least with Samba, this is not a huge problem because you, for using Kerberos and stuff like that, you really have to use NTP anyway. So huge jumps are not the norm.
Okay.
I'm bringing this up because just right now I'm...
If you have longer comments, take the microphone. That's easier then.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. I just wanted to mention that I'm bringing this up because I'm having a hard time debugging some issues on a virtualized environment where the real-time just jumps maybe. In some cases, I could show you the logs. It sometimes jumps for 24 seconds real wall clock time. And so 24 seconds is so much that I think to be prepared for these virtual environments, we should really try to only use these monophonic timers where you not want the real time, and I will tell you the API.
Thanks a lot for that interior. It's still turned on. Okay. Obvious question, how do I cancel such a timed event if I got the DNS record I was waiting for 5 seconds for? Here comes the virtue of Telok. When you look at the, Telok has changed our world. When you look at the T event add timer function call, what you see as one argument is the Telok CTX. So I just assume that you have heard of Telok. Telok is a hierarchical memory management system with, if you free something as you would with a C library call free, you can also run destructors on that, on those memory chunks that you have. And what you just do if you want to cancel the event before it has triggered, just Telok free that thing and it will remove itself from its own event context and it just won't happen as it. So, okay. The most important one probably is the generalized select loop, which is T event add FD. We have a similar callback function. What we add to that add FD function is event context, memory context. So if you want to cancel that, just free it as before. The file descriptor we want to listen on, and in this type of flags, we just send, okay, are we interested in readability or writability? And tevent loop once will call us back in this function when the condition we've been asking for is true, out of a select or a poll or epoll. So, okay. What do we have? That's the callback function, tevent fd handler t, struct t event context. That's the, so if you ask for both readability and writability in a single tevent fd, you want to know, okay, what has actually happened? Is it readable now? Is it writable now? So we get past those flags, and as usual, the private data pointer that was literally copied from what we added to the tevent fd function. Okay. We also have signals here. We have immediate events. I will go to those a bit later. But that's essentially it. For the lib event style centralized select loop. This is nice, but what turns out to be a problem, at least for my mind, is to catch multi-step things, sequences of things to be done. For example, what's a simple example? DNS. Let's look at DNS, non-recursive DNS. I might be deferred when I want to look at www.samba.org. I might to go to one central root level server. I might be deferred to another server. So those are multiple things that happen in sequence to get www.samba.org. And this is a compound request consisting of two steps at least. In fact, it's even four steps. I need to send something, I need to wait for the reply, I need to send something else to somebody else, I need to wait for that reply. So I have four steps. And when just working with this low-level tevent fd things, it becomes hairy. It becomes this huge undebuggable state machine that is really, really, really difficult. So I try to really find a model where we can encapsulate these multi-step operations, these multi-step asynchronous operations, in something that, yeah, we can grasp. And this is where the evolution starts. My first attempt was this WinBind stuff. This was a bit inspired. Who has ever looked at the programming language Scheme or Lisp programming? Okay, quite a few. Have you ever heard about the term continuation passing style programming? Okay. Okay, David has. I guess so. So what this is, Scheme has this so-called function, so-called call with current continuation, which is a very powerful but hard to understand function. This essentially means you can encapsulate the complete program state in a variable, and you can jump there later. Essentially what this is, the whole programming stack in a variable, and you can just jump there by calling another function. And this is about it. The problem here is the C programming language doesn't allow this. So what we can't do, we can't just deep somewhere in somewhere deep in a call stack, we cannot just say, okay, yield. This is the central routine of any coroutine system, which essentially means, okay, if I do a yield, I save my complete run stack somewhere, and I come back later. C does not allow this. If we had that, we would be so much better off. I found out at some point that the POSIX definition has something like that, which is called make U context or set context. And that's,
I was saying yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah. The POSIX has something like that, and there's a whole library around this, which is the so-called GNU-PTH library, which models the POSIX threads programming model around these coroutines with a central event loop. At one point, I considered to import this to Samba, not to go really fully threaded, but to a coroutine-based model. I've seen some opposition with doubts of portability. The PTH people claim they are portable to everything they have. For ancient Linux versions, they have assembler code. For everything else, they have this uContext thing, where you can really go and save your complete programming state somewhere. We did not yet go to that path. It might be an option in the future, which this is essentially pthreads without pthreads. But this is, yeah, we didn't do that for several reasons. So this means, essentially, we have to do all this continuation-based programming, this coroutine-based programming manually. This turns out to be not easy. So, and let's look at the programming model that we have as my first attempt. So, this is, here we are. Okay, this is WinBind. That's the routine that is supposed to return a name given a SID. When does this happen? To be honest, when does it happen? When does it happen in SMBD? When do we have to ask? Okay, for example, we get a group list. We get a group list from a domain controller, and we want to know, okay, the domain controller gives us the group list in the form of security identifiers, and if you want to look at WinBind NSS, you need to show names. So what we have to do is we have to convert a security identifier into a name and a domain and a SID type. And my first attempt was, okay, let's do it this way. We want to call a lookup SID async routine that takes a continuation function. And this continuation function is called when some engine, some ugly multiprocess engine, is done with asking some domain controller, which it has supposedly figured out which one to ask. So what I do is, I want to have a SID converted to a name, I call this function, and I'm done with it. And some engine somewhere calls me back, or rather calls this function, that I pass it as a continuation function, when it's done. This is okay. It's a bit clumsy to program. In particular, for example, it has no way to cancel that request. That's one of the main problems here. So we fire that request, and you don't see any handle. We have a void here. We don't return anything. It's just there in the vowels of WinBind, and we just, yeah, it's gone. We can't just telloc free it, and it's gone. Also, it's not really composable. So if we had there multiple steps, it's not really composable. It's an API that you have to write specialized function for every single type of function call that you have. For example, lookup name looks completely different. Lookup name takes a memory context, it takes a DOM name, it takes a domain name, it takes a name, and it also takes a continuation function that would take a SID. And so it's not really, yeah, let's look at lookup name async. Here, just other way around. But it's custom for every type of request that we might send off. Completely custom. Okay. That's the first attempt. Second attempt, or rather in parallel, I would have to look up the Git log or SVN logs, which was developed first. But I think Samba 4 has already developed, or had already developed, an async programming model, which looks a bit closer to what we have now, what we think is best. Let's look at what Samba 4 does very deep down. Let's look at libcli raw. Let's pick one. I didn't really... What is a simple one? Where do you have close? Does anybody know where we have close? Maybe you're here. Ah. Okay. Here we have the Samba 4 way to asynchronously close a file against an SMB server. What we have here is, okay, we have the representation of an SMB connection. What we have here is a set of parameters, and if we can look into that somewhere there in this param struct, you see the file descriptor, the 16-bit uint, 16-byte, if you have SMB2. So what happens here is SMB raw close send fires off a request against this SMB connection and gives back an SMB client request. Let's look at this structure. And I hope my tags now finds it immediately. No? Stefan, can you tell me where it is defined? Interfaces? No. Nope. Request.h? Maybe it's there?
Maybe.
Nope. Sorry. Disappointed.
It's in libclean raw, I think. It's SMB clean.
Ah, sorry, SMB, sorry.
Line 225-ish.
Okay, here we are. Okay, that is the structure that is being returned by this raw close send. That raw close send doesn't do anything on the network. It doesn't block. It doesn't do anything. It just fires off a request to this SMB connection. And what we get here is a huge structure that has one important aspect in particular, which is this set of asynchronous callbacks. This is a bit similar to what you had in the continuation function argument that I showed you in the WinBind requests. So what happens here is you fire off this request and you don't tell this routine which callback routine to call. So it's a bit more flexible. You don't tell this send routine, okay, I want to be called back here. You can do something else with it. In particular, you can explicitly wait for that request and not be called back automatically. A bit more flexible. You can, however, fill in this structure that says, okay, when this request being returned is done, please call this function with this function that points to that request structure itself. This callback function then can look at its own private data that was put here and so on. So that's a bit more flexible. However, it turns out that this, at least for my taste, and now the design decisions start, where I think, and I am really open for discussion, where I think this is a bit too complex. What you don't see here is an event context. This is the thing that is missing here. So there is no explicit event context that you fire this off to. Why is that? In this programming model, the event context is attached to an SMB connection. And for my test, this is a bit too much state information behind the scenes. And I wanted to reduce complexity. So in the model I'm proposing in maybe in half an hour time, yeah, Stephen? Take the microphone, that's just next to you.
In this model, I don't yet understand when we set the callback function.
Mm-hmm. What?
So after you call the function, we get the struct back, and then we set what the callback function will be. When do we set this?
For example, this function that says, okay, I want to convert a name to a SID. You want to do something with that SID. So at some point, a client comes in and wants to translate this name for some reason. And you want this to be asynchronously. What you do is you fire off this request. You get a handle. You get this SMB client request thing. And you can then either do one of two things. First, you can actively wait for this to happen. That's the synchronous variant. And then look at a result. I'll look at that in a minute. The other thing is you can just put that somewhere. But you need to be notified. You want to do some. You want to satisfy your client's request at some point. So client comes in, WEinfo minus minus sit to name. Maybe I just didn't get your question.
I guess I was wondering how there's not a race between sending off the request and setting the callback function. Is that just because we're single?
No.
We're single process.
We are not threaded. That's an important aspect. We are not threaded. In this whole thing, nothing happens without us calling event loop once. And that's a really important point. Thanks for pointing that out. Nothing happens without us calling T event loop once. Once we call T event loop once, everything can happen. But as long as we are just sending that off and directly in the next few code lines, directly set that callback function, we are safe.
Okay.
More questions or? Okay, great. So what is happening in Samba 4 is we have a deeply embedded event loop, event context in the SMB connection, in every other style of connection. And this for my taste is a bit too complicated, a bit too much state embedded somewhere. And requests are being replied to somewhere out of the blue. It's not as obvious as I would like it to be. Okay. This is a good programming model. Turns out that this is, even in Samba 4, not complete. Because the problem here is, you see, SMB CLI underscore request. Wait a second, I want to close a file. I don't care if it's over HTTP, if it's over SMB1, if it's over NFS. I don't give a shit, to be honest. Sorry. The caller shouldn't have to be aware that this is an SMB connection. It might well be an SMB2 connection. It shouldn't care. So this is, from a programming model, quite good, but it is tied way too closely to SMB. And if we look at, for example, where do we have the LDAP libraries? Or where do we have the DCRPC libraries? LibRPC. RPC. I think it should be here. I'm looking for the DCRPC request underscore, the DCRPC request structure. This is the equivalent for something done over RPC. We have an equivalent for something done over LDAP. We have an equivalent for something done over HTTP, I believe. Or it would have to be an equivalent that carries HTTP in its name. And also, this doesn't really cover those multi-step things. And I figured that out when writing WinBind in Samba 4, or when starting to write WinBind in Samba 4. WinBind is the most, most obvious user of this async stuff. And WinBind naturally has multi-step things. Connect to a domain controller with S-channel. I mean, find the domain controller, open your SMB connection, figure out your account name, open the first netlog on pipe connection, do the auth 2, then open your second netlog on with the S-channel. That's how many protocols do we have here? Yeah, starting with DNS, with Kerberos, stuff. Just to get a darn netlog on S-channel protected connection to an arbitrary domain controller somewhere. So what we did is, let's look at a very old style, I would say, multi-step where is it? I have it somewhere here. Here, that's the one. This is essentially the first one, first kind of model where a multi-step async programming thing was done, task was completed in Samba 4. What we have here is, okay, we want to send, we want to open an SMB connection up to the tree connect, maybe, I think. This in itself is a multi-step process. DNS lookup, connect. Necprot, session setup, and then tree connect. Five steps, and with some steps in between. Session setup can be multiple steps already. How did this work? Okay. So, we initialize a state. We initialize some kind of state. And what you see here is step zero of this composite function, which is, hey, get me the IP address. And this is, you meant probably this sequence. This is thread safe because we don't have threads at this level. Nobody will ever touch this data structure. And we're not doing any T-Ventil once things before this here is being set. Okay. This is step one of, okay, get me an SMB connection. We send off the request, and we send off, and this is problematic from my point of view, we send off a single handler that is called back when this first step is received. Let's look at this handler. Here it is. Okay. We have to set up, a complete enum thing. Enum definition. We lay out in the state structure that we get as our private data. We lay out there, okay, the resolve is done. Then we call, hey, this is being called when the resolve is done. Let's look at that. Okay, next step. We send the SOC connect send thing. Hey, we want a socket connection. The connect call can block. So we have an asynchronous version of the connect system call that can block for an arbitrary time. And again, you see here, same function put into the async callback. That kind of sucks. It's not really, it's from my point of view. And this is where I'm open to discussion. Because we have kind of a sequence what happens, but guess what happened if we have conditionals here? Okay, we follow either this, we have IPv6 or IPv4. That's where it gets really hairy. Okay. This is the first attempt in Samba 4 to get this async stuff composable. When you look at the WinBind architecture in Samba 4, it looks a bit different. Let's look at that. So I got the first half done, I think, huh? Didn't I? Like, time-wise.
Yeah.
Okay. And here we are pretty close to what we have in Samba 3 right now. So what we did was we created a generalized composite context that is supposed to really contain more than one step. But again, I mean, that's better than having SMB CLI request, having SMB2 CLI request. It just says, okay, multiple steps of something. What needs to be done, by the way, in some future point is to convert all the SMB CLI something in Samba 4 to something else, just to hide the fact that this is SMB stuff. So what we have here is a composite context, and I have to look at that again for the exact memory hierarchy. Let me see. This is way too complex, sorry. It's just too clumsy for... okay, here we are. For example, user DOM groups. I believe that this is... Okay, get me the groups for a certain user out of a domain controller. First thing we do is... we have to do the open user thing before we can ask, okay, query group members, user groups. So we have a multi-step thing, winbind semr user DOM group send. This is the user rate we want to query, we want the group list from. And we open, and this is, I'm not gonna go into every detailed step here because that's what I'm gonna do for the new model that I want to propose here. Structurally, it's very similar. First step is we ask the DCRPC subsystem, hey, give me a user handle. I have this rate, give me a policy handle for that user. Open the user in the SAM. When I'm done, hey, call this guy. That one has been defined with a prototype up here, receive open. And okay, we are firing that off. And so we're here. And what we do here is we have a sub request. And I'm not going into the telog hierarchy yet, but we have a sub request. We have this open user. And we need to receive the result of that open user. And this is what we do here. We have a request, and this is the sub-request that we have been fired off. So the main request, we want to get the groups of a user. As the first step, we had to open the user against the SAM, and here we receive the reply to that open user. Okay, if that error checking something, step two, get us the groups for that user. And this is the difference to the model that I just showed you with the central composite handler. Call somebody else. Here, receive groups. Hidden somewhere in a routine, but this is essentially, okay, when you're done with get groups for user, call this here, call this routine here. And as you would expect, we have to close the user again. Semr close. And if you're done with it, call this function, and yeah. Essentially, we are then done, composite done. This is something I will go into detail in a minute. So this is the next step in the evolution of this async programming. We had the SMB CLI requests proper, then we had the DCRPC requests, then we had this composite request with one central callback, which turned out to be a bit clumsy to use. What we have here is, composite continuation-based programming, essentially. So we have several steps. Essentially, if you look at it, it's a bit like go-to targets. Somebody will just jump into this function. It's structured programming. It's C, pure C. It's something a bit like go-to targets, meaning, okay, hey, when you're done with it, go to here. But that's the limitation of the C programming language, that we really can't say, okay, we need to cut this multi-step thing into arbitrary and at arbitrary places, but this needs to be done. We need to cut this, but you can order it in a way in your source code that is not as that so that it's not really that bad. If you put them in sequence, call me back if this routine and this routine is exactly there, so that's essentially a go-to target. Okay, this is from a programming model almost what we have. It turns out that this can also become a bit difficult, in particular with error handling, if you're not very, very careful. Because, I mean, I've completely ignored all this telloc context stuff here. The telloc hierarchy in this thing is complex. And you can only avoid this complexity if you adhere to strict rules, essentially. So that, I mean, you have to grasp that once. But once you got it, you really have a pattern in your mind, pattern-oriented programming. I have no idea, but pattern-oriented programming. You have this pattern where you can recognize things again and get it right. We hope so, that what we have is getting is just right. Okay, we started from this composite context thing, and we generalized it to be the central async request thing. Okay, what do we have now? And now my real talk begins. Up to now, it was history. Libt event. Hey, we have a struct tevent rec. Important thing. This is an anonymous structure. So we replaced all these SMB client request, DCRPC request, LDAP request, composite request thing with one structure. Conceptually, it's the same. But it's anything can happen inside such a tevent request. By the way, the fact that this is an anonymous structure, thanks to Simo Sorcher, we had this as an open structure, but getting it as an anonymous structure really is makes it a lot easier to maintain binary compatibility when you do library upgrades. So we have a completely functional interface right now. It was a bit, I was grumbling at that time, oh, I have to rewrite all that stuff now, but it's really, it's a better API now than before. Okay. Let's look at a typical user of this stuff. And what I would like you to look at is, who of you is familiar with the WinBind Pipe API? Okay, some of you. This is a reasonably simple API from the data shipping back and forth point of view. It's request response, and it's also a bit complex because you have this extra data structure. But it's reasonably simple. We just write 3K and we get 4K back or something like that. Reasonably simple. One of the first users of this stuff is, where is it? I think it's in lib. Things move around these times a bit. There we are. Okay, this one. What do I want to do? I want to asynchronously write a WinBind request structure into a pipe, into a socket. And this is how I do it. Okay, WB request write send. So if you just have this synchronous function in your mind, what you do is, hey, WB WinBind request write. That's the sync version of it. And what we do in Samba 3, or maybe at some point in Samba 4 also, is when we want to split that up, we always do two functions. or rather three externally visible functions. The first is, okay, we fire off that underscore send request. How that works in a minute. We also have the underscore receive request, a receive function. How that works in a minute. Those are the two publicly visible async functions. And usually we also have a sync wrapper around this. And these sync wrappers, obviously I didn't do this for this one because that's an async library. We have the synchronous version of that already around with different infrastructure. But normally you would also generate a synchronous wrapper around this underscore send underscore receive. Okay. Request write. This here is complete boilerplate, these two lines. And here I would really like to walk you through this function very closely. This is complete boilerplate. Yes, it hasn't. Let's modify it to modern state on the fly, to modern conventions on the fly. Okay. We always have two requests. We don't, in this kind of routine, we never mess with file descriptors, with FD events or timed events at all. Please forget this FD event thing, and only use those if absolutely necessary, if there's no way to encapsulate a file descriptor event in some sane structure somewhere. Because those are low level, those have led to problems. They are really low level API. What we always have is, hey, we have a T event request that we give back to our caller that, yeah, that represents the process we are implementing. What we also always have, except for some very low level routines, is a sub request. We need a helper. We need to block on something, and this is represented by yet another async routine. What we also always have is a state structure. I'll come to that in a minute. Yeah, right now. So we have this state structure. Here it actually provides some purpose. This is, in this case, not strictly necessary, but just for symmetry, I put it here. We always have a state structure that contains everything that we need to maintain while this asynchronous routine runs. If you don't have anything, just put a dummy here. Unit 8, dummy. But create an asynchronous, create a structure. And what I always do is, this is not, okay, let's do the correct convention here. So we have double, we want to write the WB winbind request send. Oh, right, whatever. We have the send, we have the receive, and we have WB underscore request write state. Hey, some little macro magic. First thing, call tevent recreate. What does this do? That's a macro. Simo bitched about that, but at this point, macro is necessary. This creates a telloc hierarchy, and this is where I'm going to draw my pictures. Okay, let's look at how it's used. I create my request that I return to the caller, and I also want to allocate my continuation state. Essentially the closure environment when you look at scheme. So this is put into that variable, and hey, I have to tell my tevent recreate how large this is. So I put my struct WB request write state in there. And the macro magic now provides a, okay, size of. Size of struct WB whatever, something state. And what happens in this routine down there is, what you would expect. We have a telox. Is this zero actually necessary?
Yes. It's useful to catch seg faults instead of having,
Yeah, but I mean, 99% of the rest we are initializing anyway.
If you're interested.
Whatever.
Yes.
I didn't put it in there. This is not my. Okay. Yeah.
Something will warn you if you do that.
Yeah, some Valgrind or you guys.
We could just write.
This is the buff part, by the way.
Make this.
Yeah.
GLibc environment variable that makes GLibc always secure.
Whatever. Okay. This does the expected italoc request. Italoc the sub request. And telloc hierarchy is important here, so I have my star rec, I have my star subrec, and I have my star state. Okay, so this is the request I'm returning to my caller. Telloc child of that is my state. And anything I have to put there, strings, whatever, complex structures, will always be children of this, of the state. Never attach anything to this guy here. Always, in your async engine, attach anything to the state. In particular, and we'll come to that later, that subrec variable. Here. Our helper that, yeah, we make use of. Okay, so some lines above, we have telloc zeroed the request. Oops, okay, it was already there. Okay. That's the memory context that we passed in. As a child, we have our request. And this becomes important later on. We also look at the macro magic. We set the name of that child to become struct wb rec write state so that we can do type checking later on. Okay. We created the structure up to here. So, what did we want to do? We wanted to fire off a winbind request. First thing we do is, okay. This is the one that we depend on. And this is the one that will actually ship the request. Not really popular, man, write V. I recently discovered that we have this fancy, I've known about it, but I've only been able to make use of it really since recently, since we had a bug with a very nasty SMB implementation that choked on SMB requests being sent in two TCP packets. So I discovered write V, and what does this do? It's a single system call that takes an array of struct IOVEX structures, and in each of the error elements, we have a base pointer and we have a length. So you can just tell the kernel, okay, here's 5 bytes, there's another 10 bytes, and here's my big chunk of 10 kilobytes. Fire them off to the socket in one packet. And we do this asynchronously now, and this helps us here. So we have this count equals one. We fire off the winbind request. We initialize the first part of this state IOVEX structure. here. That array was allocated as part of the state. And if we have this extra data, this nasty field, we just also initialize the second part of this write IOVEC array. Okay, what do we do now? We fire off our helper. We have, and this is really what we would like to use as the basis for all this socket-based IO, write vSend. Okay, let's ignore that Q part for a moment. We fire off that write vSend. If that, and this is not yet current conventions, t-event rec nomem, okay. Again, this is all about symmetry. This is hell complex stuff, and we want to be it as simple and symmetric as possible. So all error conditions that we might face further down, which we don't hear, but which we might face in a multi-step process, should always be handled in the same manner. One of the things that you will face is, okay, you couldn't allocate something, malloc failed. And the handling of that error will always look like this. I allocated a pointer, and hey, we're in an asynchronous routine. I need to tell somebody, hey, there's a nomem condition. What do? I call if t event rec nomem, and this is the pointer I try to allocate. If I am in a no memory condition, okay, tell somebody. And that's the difference between a setup routine and somewhere deep inside the engine. I'll come to that in a minute. Okay, what does this do? Okay, where are we? We have a void pointer that we try to allocate. If that was successful, we don't hit here, we don't go here, into this here. If we fail to allocate, then we go into the rec structure, the one that we pass back to our caller. We have to tell somebody, hey, there was a no memory condition, and we note that, we put that down in the request structure here, that we pass back to our caller, so that somebody later can find that somewhere in between there was a no memory condition. Okay. Where have we been? Okay, we have set up, please write V, send this potentially two blobs down the socket. Yeah, Steve? Take the mic.
Do we need helper functions then for every type of error that can occur?
What?
Do we need helper functions then for every type of error that can occur? We've got this T event rec for the no memory condition. No, what about other
what we, for example,
error
have
conditions?
Is, yeah, T event rec anti-error. We have a general, so this async request thing, this t-event rec thing carries a UIN64 for a user error. So in case we have anti-status, we can just pass the 32-bit anti-status error there. I explicitly chose UIN64 to also cover the GSS API errors at some point. We don't make use of that yet, but GSS API is two UIN32s. So we need just space. So this t-event rec carries 64-bit of space of user error, and it has its own internal error, nomem, and so on, error states. Okay. So helper, and what we do now is, and this is part of the functional interface to that thing, we set the callback function. This used to be, until its last iteration, this used to be the we set that structure directly, the callback there directly. Okay. By the way, this is not used right now anymore. Okay. When I started with this wreg-write, I showed you two routines, underscore send, the user visible, okay, start this async, underscore receive, okay, we're done with it. In between, we also always need a third routine. We always have this helper, do something. And if we just have a single step that wraps another thing, I always call this routine underscore done. So we're done with the write V. And this is also pretty much boilerplate code for this kind of stuff. We are done with this the sub request. So our helper has finished, and we need to do something with the result now. So also the helper, write V send, has its write V receive counterpart. And what we do here is, okay, let's figure out whether the write V has completed successfully. And if it did, we tell our parent context, or I mean, we tell the request that we have initially passed to our caller. We tell that it's done. This is what we do with this t-event reg done. How do we get there?
You change the result.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. This one needs to be changed still. I was a bit confused. Okay. We set the callback of our helper to okay, call this routine when the write V has gone through. And as it's private data, please store the request that we pass back to our caller. One thing to note here is we never store our helper anywhere. This is just deep down somewhere in this set of events. We could easily destroy it because it's a telloc child of our state. So when we go and, okay, we don't really... We're not interested anymore in sending this winbind request out. We telloc destroy the parent here, and implicitly by telloc hierarchy, our helper down there is also destroyed. So we don't really need to store this sub request anywhere. And we just forget this. We don't store it anywhere. However, the event thing, the event subsystem stores it somewhere. So when we are done with a sub request with our helper, this shows up here again. Jeremy?
So, couldn't that be a little dangerous?
Couldn't that be a little dangerous if an event is explicitly cancelled?
Cancelled as in
sorry,
what?
How would you cancel
an event?
All right, let me think. I'm trying to... If somebody talloc freed an FD event, or is there nowhere to get to that?
Shouldn't happen. We don't see talloc free. We don't see FD events ever anymore, and that's
right.
An important aspect of
my. Yeah, that's what I mean. If anyone dug deep into the event loop and actually decided to cancel IO and they talloc free an FD event,
we're screwed.
Okay, then you get a dangling pointer, right? So
yeah.
Don't do that. Got
don't
it.
Do. Right. And this is one of the important. We have a question. That's a really important aspect. Why I wanted to hide these FD events.
Yes, because I've seen problems where you cancel FD event by calc freeing it and you get a dangling pointer.
Right.
But I can think about a scenario that you will want to say those sub events, sub requests. Let's say if you have two sub requests that you can execute in parallel, then when one of them returns with the error,
sure.
You probably would like to cancel the first and the second one
yep.
Without waiting for it to return.
Perfectly right. This is the very simple one step, one sub request thing. Things certainly can get a bit more complicated. And if you look at my last iteration of the async SRB library. You have enough of that. So we store it somewhere. And yes, this is the very simple, okay, let's just wrap a single async request with something else, just as an introduction. David?
What does
use the mic.
It's a very short question.
Okay.
What does the sub-request use for state?
Well, the question was, what does the sub-request use for state? Something, I don't care.
Not the state that was associated with the request.
No. I have some helper function, and this whole API is made for me not having to care what this does to fulfill its purpose. And write v, that's the low level one. And if you look at that, where are we here? If you look at write v send, this is the one that is a bit more complex, which somewhere, wait a second, not even there, no. The write v send somewhere does the t event at fd thing that I want to hide. So here is the complexity that I as much as I can want to hide from the people trying to use this async stuff to build more complex stuff, to build more complex structures. Okay, we're pretty much done. We are all already over time?
No, you have still another 15 minutes.
Okay.
Well,
30. 30 minutes.
13.
Ah, okay. So what do we do with this? Just to build yet another structure on top of this. Similar stuff for the reading, and this is a particular API that is a bit more complex, but which is, from my point of view, quite general. What I want to show you is another example of, no, that's not the one. WB client. Okay, I want a two-step async function. And just to show you how we have intermediate errors, how we handle intermediate errors that occur somewhere in this 10-step, oh, get me an S-channel protected connection to domain controller. And I started with WinBind, and here, that's the one. And this is the basic WinBind request response thing. Okay, what we want, we have this, okay, fire off this WinBind request. And WinBind is synchronous, and we want to wait for the reply. And this is just a simple model of, okay, the internal internal WinBind, thank you for the 10-minute sign, the internal transaction just reply response, two steps. Just to send the request, we had only one step, the write v, now we have two steps. And I want to show you that. Okay. Usual thing, we have a send function, we have a state, and what I always do is we have two internal completion functions or callbacks or whatever you call that. And I mean, obvious names, we want to write and then we want to receive. Write done, read done. These are called when, these are essentially our go-to targets. When the write is done, okay, we now have to fire off the read request. And then the read is done, and hey, we are done. Okay. Boilerplate. Sorry. Yeah, this is kind of an evolution, but I think we are at a very good state now. Okay. So we do our T event recreate. This creates this first step till here. We fill in what we have to maintain across all that, the state that we have to maintain. We need the event context. We need the FD event because we have to fire off the read request later. So we need to maintain this across this whole engine. Now we make use of the routine that we just have dissected very closely. We send off our sub request, and also here, t event rec nomem sub rec. I don't go into that post. Okay. Okay, here we're done. Yeah, very similar style. Please call this routine when the request is being sent off to the socket. Okay. We hear the sub request, in particular this WB rec write send has finished. This variable also shows up again here, same value. And now, wait a second, we need to fire off a read request, so we have to get at our state. Because somewhere above, we've stored the file descriptor into the state variable. And this is where I would really, really recommend to follow very strict conventions. For example, you could be tempted to put rec as a sub variable of the state structure. Don't. Please don't. Because we have this rec as a callback private pointer to our sub request. And this is, so, I mean, this looks a bit clumsy, but you get used to it. It's really a pattern. We have this structure. We got this here. This sub request has just finished. It ended up in this variable here that I now mark as black. We got this back. And what this here did is give us a pointer back up here. Yeah, Simo? Microphone somewhere? Or is it a quick question?
Yeah, I use into the state. I mean, in LDB, we don't have stuff so well defined, and I hope I will be able at some point to use this stuff in LDB, but we have something similar, a bit more clumsier, and I used to often put the original request as a member of the state. It is a context there or whatever. Why do you think it's wrong? I mean, I didn't find anything clearly wrong. It sometimes feels odd, for sure.
There's nothing generally wrong with it, so it's an alternative. But I would really advertise a very common and always the same code structure.
So just a matter of convention.
Yeah,
if you always
just
use that like that,
there's nothing
everybody
wrong with
that
it.
Is looking at that will
yeah,
understand
but,
how
but
it works.
But this is a very regular telloc hierarchy that works in error cases. And if you just have those, whatever, mixed up, and if you have special cases somewhere, this gets very messy very quickly.
Yeah, I just want to say that the telloc hierarchy is the same.
Okay.
I just store the request into the state as a back pointer.
Yeah, it's not required. Because 5 minutes, because we get back the main request up there with this rec callback data, that's the callback private pointer that we put in here, the callback private of our sub request, hey, get us up the green arrow, and from there, we get type safely from rec to the state there with this routine. Absolute boilerplate code. Okay. So, did we successfully write out our our request? If not so, then we tell our caller with the t-event rec error routine We tell our caller, hey, this failed, somewhere in between. We return here. And what we have here is we have that for WBC error. We have this for, in particular, anti-status. We have this for Unix error. What you might have to do if you add more subsystems like GSS API, you might say, OK, tevent rec GSS error, for example, with the wrapper. Look at this. Look at the corresponding anti-error routine boilerplate code. So now we do our next step. We fire off the read request. Also, subrec equals. Okay. Hey, we are done with the write request. Let's tell read. We don't need it anymore. We have some more comments to that. We might do some more different things here, but this works. So let's fire off the read request. And here, this is this tevent rec nomad. What does this expose to? It used to be, okay, if subrec equals now, then tevent rec something error anti no memory return. So we just collapse this into this very convenient if tevent rec no mem, then return thing. Likewise, we'll do this as bail on something error. And again, okay, go to read done exactly as we did before. And here you see again, this, I mean, you don't see it immediately, but this is exactly cut and paste from here. Cut and paste, or rather copy and paste. It would be here. If it was, copy and paste from there. And so you get used to that. OK. Has the read succeeded? If not so, tell our caller the error. I mean, at one point, we will probably have to have this as a central routine as well. This is very similar to what we have above, but let's work with this. Maybe some more cut and pasting. So that's a two-step routine. And here you can easily then do if statements, go to to another path, and so on. Steven. OK, let's dive into that routine.
Just too late.
Here we are, rec finish. Hey, that's simple. The main one is here. If we have a callback function, call it. That's the main one. So really nothing magic, except, OK, when the caller has wait a second.
When does our rect context get freed?
Never. We have to explicitly free it in the one that has called our receive function.
Oh, sorry to interrupt, but most of you are expected in the other room for the panel discussion now.
Ah, okay.
There are a few people waiting for you, and of course
sorry.
For the audience portion too.
Okay.
So you have to wrap it up.
Yeah, I'm pretty much done anyway.
Thank you.